ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Global roaming. We did try to stay weekly. The news said no. So 5 days a week it is. I'm Hamish McDonald.
I'm Geraldine Doogue, and now joined by esteemed colleagues Latika Burke and Kylie Morris. Search for Global Roaming on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The debate over immigration, border control and social cohesion hardened this week after an attempt by a group of Australian women and children, so-called ISIS families, to come home. They've been stuck at a camp in northern Syria for 7 years. Some 70 or 80 ISIS fighters, their wives and kids have already returned to Australia over the years under the previous coalition government and the Labor government. But now, both sides of politics are adopting much tougher rhetoric, certainly in the wake of the Bondi terrorist attack and these heightened concerns over social cohesion. "I have contempt for them," said the Prime Minister. "Shut the door to them," said the opposition leader. But what can Australia do? What powers are there to stop this cohort? And what obligations does Australia have to its citizens, particularly children, even if their parents have done a terrible thing? I'm David Spears on Ngunnawal Country at Parliament House in Canberra. Welcome to Insiders on Background. Abel Rizvi is a former Deputy Secretary of the Immigration Department and now an expert commentator on all things immigration. Abel, good to talk to you again. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, David.
So what are Australia's obligations to its citizens when it comes to allowing them back into the country?
Fundamentally, all countries have an obligation to accept back their own citizens. Mm. There are powers to keep them out, at least temporarily. The two powers are in the Passports Act, and the second power is in the Temporary Exclusion Order legislation. The government has chosen to use the Temporary Exclusion Order legislation rather than the Passports Act. That's understandable because the Passports Act does not allow the government to exclude procedural fairness as the part of the process of refusing the passport.
Just explain what that means, because the opposition's been raising this, saying the Passports Act allows the Minister for Foreign Affairs to deny a passport if there's a threat to Australia's security. What does that point you're making about procedural fairness mean?
So if a competent authority, and in this instance it would be ASIO, makes a request to the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade to deny someone a passport, the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade must provide the applicant with procedural fairness. That is, the applicant must be shown the evidence against them and allowed to comment on that before a decision to refuse is made.
And that's difficult when you're talking about ASIO intelligence.
Absolutely. ASIO would not want to give them procedural fairness.
So this would only ever really apply if it's the sort of evidence that can be made public, and that would be either some sort of, court conviction or something like that in a foreign country.
Oh, that's right, something like that.
Okay, so if it's simply, this is interesting, if it's simply intelligence on an individual, that's not going to be enough to stop them being issued a passport.
No, and I don't think ASIO would want to go down that route.
Okay, so then the other option that you referenced is the Temporary Exclusion Order. This is a more recent mechanism that governments can use, and they have used it in the past. How exactly does that work?
A key difference with the Temporary Exclusion Order legislation is that it allows the government to make a decision without providing the target of the decision procedural fairness. So they don't have to be shown the evidence against them. They can't get the opportunity to comment on the evidence. There are three steps associated with a temporary exclusion order. The first step is ASIO gathers the relevant evidence and submits a recommendation to the Minister for Immigration. The Minister for Immigration considers that evidence and may or may not decide, would usually decide to just go with the ASIO recommendation. And I understand in one instance that has occurred. Finally, that decision must then be scrutinised by a judge to ensure that the decision was valid. And those three steps are difficult steps to pursue. They require the evidence that ASIO has gathered to be tested by a judge. And if the judge finds the evidence unsatisfactory, the temporary exclusion order is set aside.
But can the minister also issue an order without ASIO advice?
No, he must have ASIO advice. That is fundamental.
Because this is a point the opposition's raised, that under the Act for these temporary exclusion orders, the minister can make a decision without ASIO advice.
Well, I can't imagine how he would do that. Remembering that the basis of the decision the minister makes must be reviewed by a judge. The judge says, well, you just made this decision arbitrarily or capriciously, the judge would overturn the temporary exclusion order. I just can't see how you could make it with the minister just acting voluntarily.
And so once the order is issued, the person it applies to can ask for a permit, is that right, to enter Australia, which then triggers a 12-month process. Can you explain how that works?
So the person would then request a return permit and provide evidence that their return would not pose a risk to Australia's national security. The minister would consider that in conjunction with advice from ASIO and then would make a decision on the return permit and any conditions that would be applied to that return permit.
And those conditions can go to things like control orders once they're here in Australia, which can require them to report so often to a police station or other conditions around what they can and can't do?
That's correct. That's correct. Remembering, of course, that when these people return to Australia, the women, at least the adults, would also be subject to scrutiny by law enforcement bodies, and evidence would be taken. And if the evidence showed a charge can be sustained, that would proceed.
So the fact that only one of this cohort of 34 has been issued with a temporary exclusion order by the minister, does that tell us that the other 33 women and children aren't deemed to be a threat?
That would, well, ASIO may have suspicions, but it's got to have enough evidence to sustain those suspicions to the minister and to a judge. For the others, I imagine the situation is ASIO simply does not have the evidence that it needs.
Okay. So the other question I think a lot of people are asking is the kids. They've done nothing wrong as far as we know. They've been dragged into this horrible situation. Can or should Australia be bringing them home without their parents, without their mothers, or is that really complicated?
Oh, I think separating mothers from children hasn't got a great history. Mm. I don't think any government would want to go there.
I mean, arguably, when kids are in a dangerous domestic situation, they can and are removed. This is a situation in a foreign country, though, that is the complication here. They would need, I assume, the mother's permission for them to be separated.
I think that's right. And they would need satisfactory care arrangements back in Australia. Mm. I think usually when children are separated from their parents, it's usually because of some domestic violence associated issue rather than, and I'm not aware of any domestic violence sort of issue in this space.
The other question, what about cancelling citizenship? You know, this is sometimes talked about, and there was an attempt to do this with dual citizens, of course, in Australia. But what has the High Court said about cancelling citizenship, even if it's a dual citizen?
Well, there was previously legislation that the Coalition had introduced that enabled the minister to initiate a cancellation of citizenship. The High Court overturned that legislation. The government replaced that legislation with new legislation which involves the matter being taken to a judge. So it's a judge that decides whether there is sufficient grounds for citizenship to be cancelled. There are a number of conditions that that legislation requires. It requires that the individual have dual citizenship, they have an alternative place to go. Secondly, it requires them to have committed specific crimes, often, in most instances, violent crimes. The minister, if the minister considers that there is sufficient evidence to warrant a citizenship cancellation, the minister can make that recommendation, but it must be taken to a judge, and a judge must decide whether there is sufficient evidence to warrant cancellation.
And we don't know, do we, if any of these people, the women in this cohort, are dual citizens, whether this could apply to them?
I'm not aware of whether they are or not. My understanding was that a number of them were actually born in Australia.
Right, okay. So bottom line, short of a temporary exclusion order, which has been applied to one of them, there's nothing really that we're aware of at this stage to stop them coming to Australia technically.
No. I think at the end of the day, they will end up in Australia. I don't think any government of any persuasion would be able to stop it.
Okay. And this may be beyond your scope of expertise, but this question about what constitutes government assistance to help them come home. The Prime Minister and others have been at pains to say we're not lifting a finger, we're not helping them at all. But I assume someone's gone to do either DNA checks or confirm that they are Australian or entitled to Australian citizenship. There would have been some level of assistance at that end.
Well, it depends on how you define assistance.
Yeah.
Where the government agency is doing what it's required to do by the law, that's, in my view, not assistance. That is simply obeying the law. And I'm not aware of anything that any government agency has done which is outside the scope of what they are required to do to obey the law. So, for example, if they arrange for DNA tests, that is entirely appropriate because you need to be sure that the children are indeed who the mothers claim they are, and the DNA test helps with that.
And presumably that would have meant officials going to the camp in northern Syria to do that sort of testing?
It could have been that, or it could have been through another agent or agency, usually a UN agency or someone like that, doing that sort of work.
Okay. So, look, before we move off this issue, your expectation is, as we've seen in the years gone by, this group will eventually, one way or another, if they can get out of that camp, be allowed back into Australia.
That's right. And I don't think once a citizen with a passport seeks to re-enter Australia, there's not a lot the government can actually do to prevent that. The law prevents, basically hamstrings the government.
Now, look, this sits against the backdrop of this fairly heightened debate around immigration and keeping Australia safe and so on. A lot of this has been driven by higher than normal levels of immigration post-COVID. The net overseas migration number has been coming down over the last year or so. I think last financial year it came in at just over 300,000. This year it's forecast to be 260,000. Not sure if they'll hit that number. But is this trend, this downward trend, going to continue? Because I assume the government right now would be starting the process of working out what forecast to put in the May budget that's coming up. What would be going on behind the scenes?
So there are two things going on behind the scenes. The first is that the government would be undertaking a consultation process with state governments, with industry bodies, with a range of stakeholders on the setting of the 26-27 migration program. In addition, the government would be getting advice on the size of the backlogs that it's facing for permanent migration. At the moment, some of those backlogs are of an eye-watering size, and the government will eventually have to deal with those backlogs because those applications have a legal right to be processed.
These are the family reunion category.
Both family reunion as well, that's mainly partners and dependent children. But also there is a massive backlog of employer-sponsored visa applications, for permanent employer-sponsored visa applications, as well as the government being under intense pressure from state governments to maintain the visas that the state governments say they need to meet their skill needs.
Okay, so they've got that backlog to clear, but the pressure is there to keep that number coming down. So what does that mean they end up with in terms of a number, do you think, for the next financial year?
Well, there are two numbers that are relevant here. There is the migration and humanitarian programs. Those are the permanent residence visas issued. And the government will be under pressure to expand the permanent program to accommodate the backlog. Secondly, it wants to keep net migration coming down, but the challenges there are the government itself increased the allocation for student visas for 2026 and is now seems to be having second thoughts on that. The second challenge is a very, very strong labour market, and bringing net migration down in that context is very difficult.
Just explain to me what they did with foreign students for 2026 and why you think they might be reversing course on that.
Right. So for 2025, the government said we will allow 270,000 new commencements of overseas students in higher education and the vet sector. A number of sectors were excluded. For 2026, it announced in the middle of 2025 that it would increase that by 25,000. I have a suspicion the government did not think of the consequences of that decision for either net migration or for the long-term implications for the permanent program. It has now seen a sharp rise in offshore student applications in the second half of 2025. It has looked at those and thought, wow, that is now going to push net migration upwards, and that has worried them. So what they have done is turned around and ramped up refusal rates. It's left the universities in a very awkward situation because they were initially told they were going to have all these extra places, and now they're being told that refusal rates are being ramped up and they may not get to the places that they were allocated.
So the universities have offered places they now have to rescind.
They budgeted for places that they now must rescind, yes.
Okay. Putting all that together, what do you think we'll end up with? A lower net overseas migration forecast than 260,000?
I would be surprised if for 25-26 Treasury lowered it. It would be more likely, given the policy changes that have been put in place, Treasury, and as well as the very strong labour market, Treasury would be thinking about recommending an increase, but of course the politics of that is awful.
Yeah, the politics is tricky, but then if we don't have enough of the skilled migrants, given what unemployment's at the moment, there's a need for workers, that has a risk of pushing up inflation, doesn't it?
Well, not necessarily. We need to remember that new migrants impact both demand and supply. And the research suggests the two generally tend to balance out. The same argument occurs with unemployment. People will often say, oh, if you bring in more migrants, unemployment will go up. But the same argument applies. It impacts both demand and supply, and the two tend to balance out.
Well, we will be watching with interest to see where they land on that that number. I'm sure there'll be plenty of debate, political heat around wherever that lands. Abel Rizvi, always good to talk to you and pick your brain on all things immigration. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, David.
Well, if you have any thoughts on this conversation, drop us a line, insiders@abc.net.au. We'll have more on this on Sunday morning. I'll be talking to the Home Affairs Minister, Tony Burke. Hope you can join us for Insiders 9 a.m. on ABC TV.
You're making us all feel very excited about being here.